to the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
If you're drowning and I throw you a life jacket, would you grab it? Yes, good. Pick up 200 shares. I won't let you down.
Pay him. Pay that man his money.
Ask them how they'd like to see 30, 40% returns. What are they going to say? No? I don't want to see those returns.
Where's the money, Lebowski?
You're going to make a lot of money, right?
Well, be aggressive.
Learn how to push.
AV and Jonathan Lysenko on the board. Trust you to watch SP futures up 25 cents. Dow futures down 3. NASDAQ futures down 650. So we're doing that much here this morning. The news out of China. China GDP grows its slowest rate since early 90s. I don't know how good the news that is. Other than that, we had kind of somewhat of an update yesterday. We had Mulvaney out there trying to defend the fact that they're putting a G7 meeting at the Doral, which Trump owns. And I think Mulvaney said something to the effect that it used to bother the president, now he's over it, or something like that, which I thought was somewhat interesting. Kevin, are you with us?
Yeah, I'm with you. I don't care if he has it at Doral as long as it's for free.
It won't be for free. You know it's not going
to be
for free.
Oh, well, then I care.
Yeah, it's a... You know what, when I...
But, you know, otherwise, I'd be fine with it. You'd say, yeah, okay, you know, come on in. We can afford to host you. it's on us, and enjoy the place.
In the immortal words of Milton Friedman, there's no such thing as a free lunch.
Yeah, I've always heard it as Tanstaffel.
Yeah, well, it's a... So, not only did one of our contributors send us in this Vanity Fair thing. Did you get a chance to read this?
I did. I did not. I went to basketball practice last night instead.
So, how did you do? Did you shoot them up?
I did not practice. I watched.
Oh, all right. Well, it made it sound like you were out there, giving the boys a how-to or something.
Yeah, that's what they need, is because you know my skill set in basketball. I used to tell people I have center skills in a 6-foot body, but truth be told, I have backup center skills in a 6-foot body.
Yes, well, anyway, there's a Vanity Fair article, and I'm going to brain dead. I think this William Cohen, I think we've had him on the show, Kevin, haven't we?
Don't know.
I think we have. That's a question for Maddie Weber. In any case, we got a... As you know, the trader in me has been saying for a while that all this stuff happening with this markets flying around and all these Chinese and White House news items, and maybe a couple from Congress as well, to me, absolutely stinks like something on the sidewalk of insider trading. I really can't prove it or can't do anything, but I know pornography when I see it, kind of thing. Here is William Cohen has about 6 items in here, and I had no idea that they were this bad. And to make matters worse, on the drive in this morning, I'm driving in with the lovely AV, and she starts telling me that
you're gonna go lovely and talented if you're gonna go that route.
Yes, but she starts telling me how
thank you guys.
Your skin starts to age when you're 25, and she's 25, so she's got to get right on it.
Not yet. I will be 25 in November.
All right.
But she's
already getting on it, right? And I say, well, what about me? if this all starts to fall apart at 25, what about us, Kevin?
I just keep telling people that I get to sit back and eat popcorn and watch the carnage.
But she covered herself well. She says it doesn't concern guys. All guys need is a moisturizer, and they're fine. It's the women that have to worry about it. So that was pretty good comment.
Moisturizer and some Bengay.
Yeah, and some Bengay. And make sure you're careful where you put the Bengay.
That would be true.
The stuff when we used to use when we were younger, that stuff really stunk. Some of the new stuff, they took the smell out of it, didn't they?
Oh, Asper Cream has been my go-to for a long time, actually.
Anyway, so according to William Cohen, on the last 10 minutes of trading at the Chicago Mercantile Exchange on Friday, September 13th, someone got very lucky. That's when he or she, or a group of people, sold short 120,000, Kevin, 120,000 S&P E-minis. When the stock index was trading around 3,010, the time was 3:50 in New York. It was nearing midnight in Tehran. A few hours later, drones attacked a large swath of Saudi Arabia oil infrastructure, choking off production in the country and sending oil prices soaring. By the time the CME index opened, Pre-trading Sunday night, the index had fallen 30 points. Guess how much their net profit is?
How much?
$180 million.
Well, that's a good day's work.
Now there's always a in addition to, as Paul Harvey would say, the rest of the story. You got some guy who likes doing a podcast for the listeners and likes having a bunch of people on the air because he learns by him. A guy like me, for instance, that just happens to manage money for people. And I have my very conservative people where I do my Protect Your Next program and really not much else. And then I have a group that likes to be a little more aggressive. And we do a lot of these earnings plays, Kevin, which means like we did one in Netflix. Actually, Netflix was a big winner, but I only got a partial. Some are losers, some are winners. The idea is when a company has earnings that night or the next morning, usually the straddle balloons up, right? So actually the straddle in the Netflix was $29, which is fine, which means that's the market's essentially guess, collective guess, like a point spread, really, of how much the thing's going to move after earnings. All right, and then what I try and do is look at the time spread, the calendar spread, the difference between the expiration this week and next week, and see if that time spread, or calendar spread as some people call it, where you say you'd buy the 285s next week and sell the 285s this week. Or it could be calls, could be puts, but then obviously you want to pick your strike. I mean, it's more of this than meets the eye, but the idea is that spread, because the initial move is judged to be so much, that spread actually gets kind of narrow. So the question is how narrow? So I think the straddle for, like I said, this week was like 29.5, and next week was only 31. So I thought that spread between the two weeks was kind of light. So I put a spread on for 75 cents, and I only got it a few times. If I wouldn't have such a cheap screw and paid up a nickel, I'd have got all of it. And we'd have made, we ended up selling for $2. Okay, so by 70 cents, he sells it for $2 the next day. I mean, it's a nice deal. You could have hung on to it and maybe tried to hit a home run, but we didn't. We just got out of it because we never remember. We got like 11. We're trying to get a couple hundred. So, but I'm saying a lot of times I do these where they're only a nickel or a dime. So actually, if I do it for 10 people, I'm doing the spread like, 1,500 times or something. But my total cost might be $6,000. Because if I don't risk a lot of money for people. And when I do this stuff that's kind of esoteric, this is not investment money. This is, this guy's wanting to take advantage of, my 35 years of judgment and saying the spread is a little too low or it should be a little higher. So what I try and do is I try and find a calendar spread that I think would take a larger test than the straddle would indicate the stock's going to move, if that makes any sense. And I have a machine that can simulate that for me. So, anyway, but if I do the spread like that, say 1,000 times, RBC, our clearing firm, has to send a report to the bleeps in Washington because it's considered a large trade. Who did it? Why did they do it? We essentially have to fill that report out for like $8,000, Kevin. And if I'm going to say, if you bleeps are not going to watch this kind of crap, lay off me. At least lay off me and fire all the idiots that are checking this stuff out. Because if this thing's right in your face and you don't care or you can't go after them, at least lay off the rest of the people. Is that fair or not?
Well, what are they going to do if they can demonstrate a pattern of bad activity? What are they going to do? Fine them? They can fine them the whole thing, or are they?
Well, you should fine them the whole thing plus, right?
It's just that cost of doing business.
You should fine them the whole thing plus, right?
Yeah, you would think so.
Well, first of all,
that's going to be the way it plays out.
But I mean, they know that I did it. They know the size of my male appendage. For God's sake, they want to know about me for doing $8,000. At the very least, you'd find out who these people are.
Bad mental image.
Yeah, no kidding. So I mean, why is it that they get to do it anonymously? Either nobody cares to look, which is one side of ignorant, or they actually do know who the people are and just let them go. September 3rd, a week earlier, 3 minutes before the CME closed on September 3rd, somebody bought 55,000 E-mini contracts, an index at about 2906, at around 9 p.m. in New York, 9 a.m. in Hong Kong. It started moving, it kept rallying for the next 6 hours or so. Around 2 p.m. in Hong Kong, Carrie Lam, the Hong Kong leader, announced that she'd be withdrawing the extradition bill that had been roiling the city protests for months. That guy made $82 million. All right. Now, here's the best. But these wins were peanuts compared to the money made by a trader or a group of traders who bought 420,000 September E-minis in the last 30 minutes of trading on June 28th. That was 40% of the day's trading volume. Compare that to me doing a time spread for 8 cents, Kevin. I mean, what are we talking about? This is 40% of the day's trading volume. And I'm doing peanuts, absolute peanuts on my end, and we have to send a report every time. By then, President Trump was already in Osaka, Japan, 14 hours ahead of Chicago, on his way to a roughly hour-long meeting with China's President Xi Jinping, and part of this was a secret meeting. They don't even know he was going, allegedly. On Saturday in Osaka, after the market had closed in Chicago, Trump emerged from his meeting with Xi and announced that the intermittent trade talks were back on track. The following good week was a good one on the stock market, thanks to the Trump announcement. And on Thursday, S&P index stood at 2915. A week or so later, it was just below 3,000 to gain 84 points, 4,200 bucks per E-mini contract. So the 420,000 times 4,200 is $1.8 billion. You know? And yet we're paying people
just better at reading the tea leaves than everybody else.
And this is the same guy who's going to put the G7 at his country club. You know, I have a question on that, just by the way, for somebody who has actually been to the Doral. I was there once. It was old then, Kevin. It was real old. The place has been there for 100 years. It is right in the landing pattern for Miami. How, on a security thing, why would you put the G7 with planes flying over the top of it?
Yeah, that's an interesting question because, everybody's going to have to be diverted.
Yeah.
Which will be a tremendous inconvenience for the duration of the conference for anybody flying into and out of Miami.
And these are planes that are DC-3s. They're old. I don't, at that time, this was in 98, I saw some 707s come in, but they're not around anymore. I bet there's some 727s. I bet you get a couple of DC-10s and DC-8s you don't see in this country anymore. That thing takes all comers. I mean, you get planes coming. You know, what was the movie, was it Airplane, where you see the plane with the mustache on it and stuff? Well, if there was any of those, they'd be flying into Miami. Like, Miami and Kennedy are, like, the only places. I mean, there's guys coming in from South America in DC-3s. You say, what is that thing coming in? Because when they come in, their nose is pointed down when they come in. You ever seen those things land?
Oh, not for ages.
Yeah, I mean, but I've only saw a few.
Yeah,
but like,
as you mentioned that, yeah, I had forgotten all about that.
Instead of, like, when a jet comes in, the nose is a little higher than the rest of the plane. It just kind of slowly glides and falls out of the air. But DC-3 looks like it's actually pointing the nose toward the ground. It's really weird looking. Anyway.
Okay, so what other fun stuff is going on in the world? What did I miss? I was on the road yesterday, so what did I miss?
Well, they've got the thing with Doral was a big problem. It appears they have a Brexit, Kevin, but that the Parliament, I just think that half the people there in Parliament don't want to Brexit no matter what, and never did. And they're going to keep voting against it till somehow or another they get another vote for the people. And I just think that's wrong. I mean, this deal is not a bad deal from what I gather. And it's probably the best they're going to get. They should just say, let's do it. We had the vote. But I think some of those Brits are that stubborn that they didn't want the Brexit in the first place, and they're not going to vote no matter what it is. It's not good enough.
Well, you know, that really is it. You hear people talk about the ruling class. You know, you talk about management class a lot, but there's also this ruling class of people, and they kind of operate under the assumption that while they're lining their own pockets, they know what's best for everybody else. They are, as and people who break into it, you have to break into it. It's hard to break into it, and I always call them condo board refugees because they start out being busybodies on condo boards and then they move on to politics.
Yep. Well, but I wonder when I see this kind of stuff, obviously in my business, the incredible lack of, matter of fact, our buddy Carl was going crazy. I don't want to talk about the guy because the guy died yesterday, the representative. But I didn't realize his wife had so much problems that she was kind of linking up a LLC with a charity and money flying back and forth, which you can't do, and she never got prosecuted. And I mean, this whole idea of selective enforcement of all this stuff. Kevin, that's going to take us down. I mean, this is the kind of stuff.
Yes, it is.
This is the kind of stuff that revolutions are made of. And why would I? I don't even want to say it, but why would somebody who maybe doesn't have the moral backbone that I hope I do, if somebody comes down on me for some trade that means nothing to anybody, and I probably didn't even make any money on, and I read something like this, how do I not go postal? I mean, at some point I wouldn't. But what if I was somebody who was on some kind of drugs or something, and you said, why am I taking this crap from these people? Why, how do they have the nerve to come after me?
At least stick your head out the window and yell, I'm mad as hell and I'm not going to take it anymore.
But I mean, is it just that I'm doing the show and I'm more attuned to it? Has it always been this bad? Or what is the deal with this? Why?
I think it has always been this bad. It hasn't always been as accepted.
You mean when it was
fought
out?
What I mean by that is we now tend to accept some of this stuff because it's my team versus the other team politically.
Maybe.
So we accept what my team does, and we have a problem with it when the other guy does it.
Well, I don't get that. What school do they go to? And what parents do they have?
Well, that's a good question.
I don't know. So
when Barr went to Notre Dame, gave a speech, talked about the breakdown of family structures and things like that, he got skewered for it. So, but you know, you ask the question, what parents do they have? Well, that I think that's part of it.
And
it isn't even that you necessarily have bad parents. You know, I'm divorced. I worked really, really hard to be part of my raising my kids. My ex-wife and I. We always agreed that the kids were ours, and we would always do stuff that benefited the kids together, and we wouldn't trash each other to the kids, and we would be nice and go to their stuff. And my son wound up living with me through high school, and you sort of get the drill. It's doable, but it's hard. It's really hard, especially when you have parents who just can't stand each other. And so, you look at the divorce rate, and then you look at the number of people who are just truly at war with each other over everything in their lives, and it's nothing but anger. And you got to believe that affects, how we raise children. And that gives us a really large percentage of children who are, who don't know what to make of it, who don't know what to make of adult behavior. We talk about things like, bullying and behaving civilly. I've spent a lot of time this year, visiting high schools that have implemented innovative programs, and a big cornerstone of it is, employability skills, how to work in a diverse environment, how to work in teams, do research and things like that. And then you turn on the news, those same kids turn on the news and see how people behave in the political environment, and it's a total disconnect for them. So, yeah, I can see how we got there. We're nuts. We're friggin' nuts.
How do people, I think, this is, again, I think I get everybody think I'm nuts, which is probably very much true. I think a lot of it comes down to money, Kevin. I really do. And I think that to a certain extent, the people I grew up with in my parents' generation, they always, maybe coming out of depression, most of them lived, I know my parents did. I mean, my stepfather had an exceptionally good job for the bungalow we lived in. I mean, he grew into the job. It wasn't like he had it when we bought the place, but he ended up getting like a promotion every couple of years where he's like a VP of finance someplace, and we're living in a bungalow in 102nd place. Obviously, we could have afforded more, and we eventually did move a couple miles away into a little nicer house, but still not anything extravagant. And because
I remember playing basketball in that backyard.
Well, but that was not extravagant. And the idea was you still put, 15-20% of your paycheck away. If you live below your means, no matter what, I mean, he could have told his boss to pound sand, and they could very easily have lived for 6-8 months without having a job, without a blinking, because they didn't go out every night. We didn't have an expensive car. There was never a car payment. If they bought a car, you wrote the check. back when you could do those sort of things. So, I mean, people had a certain financial independence, even if it didn't look like they did, living in a bungalow. I mean, there was always another job. It wasn't like he couldn't go become an accountant anywhere. I mean, the guy had an MBA, University of Chicago, nobody even had such a thing. So, but I'm saying is the, I always talked about Father Fitzgerald, the guy from Notre Dame, and your views of life, I'll say, evolve, Kevin, when you get older. I don't know if they get better or worse, but they evolve. And I always thought, had him in class, and he was a guy that taught labor law, and he taught about it. And all my views about combinations of business and my detest for them most of the time, because I don't think many of them are economically justified other than to raise prices, came from him. And he would say he was the original black and white guy, nothing to do with race, where if he was a mediator somewhere, and I asked the question one day, I said, what do you do? How do you remain independent? I asked the question. I never asked. I was in the back row. That's where I always sat. And he said, when I go someplace, I make my own reservation, usually in a crummy hotel. I said, I land, I rent a car, I go over there, I go to some little nondescript restaurant bar, get my burger and my beer. And if somebody says, your beer is comped, I immediately walk to the payphone, call up and say I've been compromised and I'm out. And yet, to a certain extent, Kevin, the guy was a teacher. He didn't have any money. He was a priest, right? But in a certain extent, he was like my stepfather and my mom. He had some place to come back to. He had, in immortal words of who's the nutty fighter? The guy who bit the guy ear.
Well, that narrows it down.
No, the guy who bit the guy's ear off.
Tyson.
Mike Tyson. Jail's no problem. I get three hats and a cot. I honestly think that Father Fitzgerald could afford to tell these guys to pound sand and go back. He didn't need the money, Kevin. I mean, it was nice for him because I'm sure he donated it to the school and it was a big deal personally, I think, but he didn't need it. Now, if you wander yourself out to the point where I need this job, I just got talked into, I'm not saying the women do it, sometimes the guys do it. Somehow we got this house that's we really shouldn't have. Why I've got two cars that I got payments on that I don't need, I have no idea. All of a sudden you get to the point where I need the money for this arbitration. I can't tell these guys to pound sand. And it starts to get very co-opted. I mean, I felt, even though I think the guy's got the smirk on his face a little bit, Mulvaney yesterday, Kevin, I wouldn't want that job out there trying to justify to people how the hell a huge conference got into a place on where the press. There is no justification for it. I mean, I don't want to be out there. I mean, I'm going to assume the guy's a moral dude, grew up right and everything. Why would you want to be out there? And I mean, it's at some point you got to say, I can't do this. I'd rather not have the job. But it becomes this degrees of co-option. And the co-option comes because the leader sucks. Not just him, but all over the place. Some of these companies and other places, they lie, sort of below them lies. You know what I'm saying? The leaders start to demand this of you. Just like this, and the perfect example is this moron over in China who was demanding the NBA fire the guy from Houston for, I mean, and thankfully the NBA said no. That's what, we're learning a lesson from these guys about how we don't want to be. I hope we're learning. Do you think we're learning it or no?
No.
I mean, I would never once, if I was going to do something dumb, like put the conference in my place, the last thing I would hope I would do is ask you to go out and justify it. At least I try and do it myself, as stupid as it may even sound.
Well, and I'm sure he'll be asked about it too.
Well, I'm sure, but not,
we'll hear we'll hear that justification.
I honestly think the whole idea how close it is to the airport is a bad idea. I mean, there's nothing to do. Who owns it?
Yeah. But, you know, I'll go back to what I said at the very beginning. You know what? If he walks out and says, oh, by the way, when Trump says, oh, by the way, he goes wandering off in some other direction. So if he comes out and says, no, we're competent. It's totally free, no expense to the United States or any of the other countries. You're welcome. If he wants to do that, fine.
His father's going to come out of his grave.
No problem, but I'm not expecting that that's the case.
If that happens, his father will appear next to him from the dead and crack him on the head. Just saying.
I hope the cameras are rolling.
I hope the cameras are rolling. Then I want to be a guy who's an expert on extraterrestrial activity or something, or people from the dead, because you know somebody will be an expert, right?
Yeah, you'll probably work for CNN.
Hey, where are we? We're up $1 in the S&P. We'll be right back. Stacks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Harrell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Stocks, jocks,
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right
now. Welcome up, guys. Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howard. She's AV on the board. We have Mr. Kevin O'Neill with us as well. SP Futures up 275. NASDAQ Futures up $1. The Dow Futures are flat. Coca-Cola earnings came out there to the good side. We got Coke up 59 cents, 56 cents now, trading 54.35. American Express is up $1.91 as their earnings were also okay, up 121.01, but nothing Nothing crazy on the earnings side yet this morning. Nothing like the Netflix or whatever like yesterday or IBM. IBM was ended up down over $7 yesterday, so ouch on the IBM. Around the rest of the world, we've got DAX up 23.2%, FTSE up 13.2%, DAX down 13.2%, so mixed to not much over there. Nikkei up 40, that's 0.2%. A lot of 0.2s here. Shanghai, however, down 39, that's 1.3%. That's a pretty good size move. Hang Seng down 128, that's 0.5%. Bonds, 10-year, 176. Bund, minus 0.37. Again, we're creeping toward that zero mark. We're halfway there from the minus 78 they were. Japan, minus 0.16. We've got oil up 63 cents, 54.56, that's higher than we've seen in a while. Brent up 22 cents, 60.13. That spread is $5 and, I'm gonna say 55 cents. So on the low end of where we've seen it. We've seen it as high as 11.50, I believe, since we've been doing the show. Natural gas, 230. RBOB gas, 162. Gold, we got down 7.50, 14.90. Silver down 13 cents, 17.47. Platinum, well, anybody does trades platinum, we're down 4.60. Hey, V, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports. I'll do the sports.
Good morning, everyone. It's 36 past the hour, 42 degrees currently in Chicago. We're expecting to have a nice fall day with sunshine and clouds mixed together. The highest of the day will be 60, the lowest 47. And 71 degrees this morning in Phoenix. The day promising to be sunny and clear as always in Phoenix, which the highest 85 and the lowest will be 59. In traffic, we have two accidents reported. One is on Cermak Road at Clark Street, which doesn't affect traffic, and another one accident on I-90-94 West at 18th Street, which blocking the right lane, so expect some slight delays. Overall, the traffic volume in Chicago looks surprisingly clear this morning. Just some volume on 94 West from Monroe Street down to South Union Avenue. In baseball, we got Astros Houston beat Yankees 8-3.
It's always good when the Yankees, don't you think? The Yankees lose.
Why?
Because they're a team you're supposed to hate.
Why Yankees?
Well, because they're the team you're supposed to hate. They're from New York. They got nothing but money.
So what?
That's why you're not supposed to like them.
It's good to have
obviously
money.
She never saw the movie Damn Yankees, Kevin. You think?
There, now I can answer. yeah, you know, it becomes a Chicago and a second city thing, much the same way that Milwaukee feels like they're the little brother from, little brother that gets picked on from down the road. So they feel that way about Chicago.
Well, I
got nothing against the Yankees. They're a good baseball team.
Well, he was from the Senators, right? Couldn't stand
it. They're not going to win this series, but they're a good baseball team.
The fan in the movie was a Senator fan, correct? He couldn't stand his Senators.
Might have been. It's been so long. That's another one. I bet you I haven't seen it in 40 years.
That's anyway, the guy sold his soul to the devil to beat the Yankees, AV.
That's the movie about what?
Yeah. So anyway, but what'd you make of the Mahomes situation last night? As Kansas City won big, but he dislocated a kneecap on a quarterback sneak.
Yeah, I saw. You know what? I obviously wasn't watching the game because I was out last night. But the I heard some commentary about it this morning, and they were talking about, you know, the kind of second guessing the play call.
You're saying the armchair quarterbacks?
Yeah, the armchair quarterbacks, but people who get paid to do that for a living. You know what? Guys get hurt. It's really unfortunate, but especially in football, it's not only part of the game, it is all of the game in many respects, because the healthiest team at the end is the one that's going to win, assuming that you didn't suck in the first place.
Well, I also think, Kevin, and this is, again, a non-scientific fact, that if you have any kind of nagging injury, you are way more susceptible to getting an injury like the next game.
The compensation types of injuries, yeah. I get that, but I think they, you know, and this was Kyle Long situation, I truly believe. Once you start to break, you break. you get a few injuries under your belt, you're just not going to last, and it would be very, very unusual for someone. So it's one thing if you tear your ACL, you get it repaired, you come back. But it's another if you have, two knee injuries, a back injury. It just starts to accumulate, and it becomes a matter of how long and what kind of life the person wants to have when the playing days are over.
Well, I was surprised with Kyle Long, because his football years when the Bears got him were next to none. Didn't he play like 1 year in college or two? Didn't play in high school. He played baseball or something.
Yeah, and he transferred around a few times. So yeah, he was young and didn't have a lot of mileage on him. But again, you get a couple of injuries at some point, and it really starts to become cumulative.
Yeah, and I think it also there are people. I mean, there's people I knew, Kevin, who were spectacular softball players and basketball players, and if you looked at them, these are guys that got hips when they were 35. I mean, there's gene issues. I mean, we know a family where all of them were very good athletes, males and females. Did anybody make it past 40 without at least one hip?
I don't know. I'm proud to say I still have all the
original
parts.
That a lot of this is some people just, are different in terms of they have things that break down. But Kyle Long, I think that injury with the ankle was kind of so bad that... Anyway, but boy, I can't believe I'm watching the feeds here this morning. Everybody's an expert on this Mahomes thing. It's like saying every time, if you put somebody in an exhibition game and he gets hurt, you're an idiot. But then if your team's not ready to play game one, you're an idiot. I mean,
You know what? If you have exhibition games, you're an idiot.
Yeah.
Let's take that back where it belongs, to the league. They want to have practice games, and you know what the biggest reason that they have exhibition games is because they always did.
Well,
it's like this old habit. The current reason for it is because they can make the season ticket holders buy those games at full price. They don't want to give it up now because of the revenue stream, but they don't make sense like they once did.
Well, they're down from 6-4. I mean, if they went down to 3 or 2, I would. But the thing of it is, Kevin, it's like we always talk about on this show. If you squeeze the silly putty, which AB doesn't even know what that is, you squeeze it here, it pops out some other place. I mean, if you have teams that don't have exhibition games, you're going to end up with the Bears having a 3-day camp against the Chiefs, in St. Louis somewhere, because you need a place, not necessarily for your first stringers, maybe a little bit for that. You need a place for all these other people to play where you can at least watch them to see whether they should make the team or not. So it'll end up squeezing out like that. I mean, you'll end up, you still have to play against somebody else. I mean, even in our softball days, if we know we were starting one Sunday, we'd go to Saturday before. If there were some other guys practicing down the way, the first thing you do is yell over, hey, you guys want to play a game? You want to see yourself in a game time activity if you can before. I mean, so somewhere along the line, you got to get ready to play, is what I'm saying. The whole idea.
I agree with that, but I will also say that getting ready, it makes no sense to have games that don't count when the stakes are so high and the injury count, the injury probability that it not necessarily for an individual player, but for, as you look at your team, what's the first question they always ask? Any injuries today, at the end of the game? How'd we do? Yeah, great. Okay. How are we from a health standpoint?
Well, but you're talking about...
In that regard, it's kind of a silly game when you think about it.
Well, I was just going to say, you're talking about a game that has absolutely no sense to it. I mean, you're talking about what are the chances of... I'm not talking about a couple of older guys like you and me. What are the chances of guys rolling off their sofa at age 35 that are even in halfway decent shape and putting on equipment and going to play tackle football? I mean, you might play touch to your 80, which is a fine game, or you might. I mean, but there's, and of course, you could wreck a knee in touch. You can step in a hole in the backyard. You can do all kinds of things. But it's not. It would be a very unusual event. It's not like 12 people go out and play a game of touch, and you expect 3 people to be on a gurney when you come out, I mean, you can hurt playing softball, you hurt playing basketball, but it's an unusual event, and it's usually like not life threatening, right? I mean, football is especially like when Dick Butkus in the book, he said, look, in those days you played on grass. Virtually everybody played, not only in high school, he played the whole game. I said, everybody got tired together. But now you play on these, essentially a track. Your equipment weighs a fifth of what it did. And by the way, in the third period, they're going to put some guy in there who runs at you full speed like it's the first play of the game. I mean, the way that the game has evolved, I mean, look at soccer. You don't put fresh guys in every single other play to run up again. You got two guys out the whole game or three? I don't know much about soccer. Same way in rugby. Everybody gets tired together. I mean, there is no logic to today's football in any sport, any worldwide, I don't think. Or am I wrong?
And you know, yet we love it.
Yeah, well, people like the gladiator fights too.
Yep. And it is sort of that.
Yeah.
And we need to be careful because, we're just going to annoy Lou and he's not going to call in.
I think Lou, Lou will tell you that Lou boxed and played football at the Air Force Academy. And how is this for a rule? Allegedly, and he'll talk, we'll ask him again when he comes on. I think he told me that if you ever got one serious concussion, you could never fly. And yet they had boxing at the Air Force Academy. Now, explain to me that, Lucy, how that works.
They got to thin the herd somehow.
I guess. Yeah, you want to get those guys that are susceptible to concussions out early. Get them a couple early before they're in the plane. But Kevin, we were having kind of a interesting discussion, and we had, Wayne seems to think that the swamp has gotten worse. I think it has too, but I don't blame the current administration. I just think is it because we have too many laws that we only pick out the few we care about? When it starts getting so selective against people, I mean, in my industry, and I know, and I don't really give a crap if a regulator is listening, the selective regulation to me has absolutely ruined this industry. I mean, you look at the marks or the markets on the floor in some of these stocks that don't trade a lot of options. Kevin, they're illegal. We'd have got fined instantly if that was my pit when I was on the floor. You can't have stuff. You can't just decide you're not going to do something for an hour and widen them all out, or if an announcement's coming out in an hour, just decide you're not going to trade. You could never do that. And yet these guys do it. They're when you got two, three people, they absolutely are too big to spank. And then they're like that in every industry. Can you imagine if we actually found out who these two or three or ten losers are that are making these billions of dollars on these trades? You think of what do you suppose that rap sheet would look like when you brought it into the Oval Office? And what would Trump or Obama or Bush or Clinton say when you saw the names on there? And what if
and let's go back when you said, too big to spank, we built economic policy on too big to fail. We've made significant policy decisions based on that. And so if you're too big to fail, you're too big. Did we do anything about that? Did we learn anything from it?
Well, is Sean Connery...
And I'm not opposed to big on its own merits, but we do have antitrust laws for a reason.
They're too big for the institutions that we think should have a certain set of rules for everybody in this country. They're too big for the people that we have to enforce those rules to do it. They're too big for it. Our law enforcement groups are woefully behind the times unless they go after somebody that they pick on somebody their own size or less. They're woefully behind it. We've seen it in internet cash piracy out of people, right? And hacking and things like that. They don't want any part of those people. Now ask yourself, what if you happen to be the grumpino and you're in the Oval Office and you've got this thing going down with China and you keep saying how much this guy's your buddy and you find out this trade out of Hong Kong is the three sons of Xi Jinping and his family? What the bleep, Kevin? Now, what do you do? Do you expose the guy? I would, but then that's me. That's why I'm not in the Oval Office. So nobody wants me there. I would say that's why another reason why we can't do business with these guys. Look at this. But what do you, I mean, I question. I mean, I know everybody thinks I'm nuts because they probably have. By the fourth time I've said that today, and it's, I don't understand as a state.
And you're starting to see a pattern here.
Well, I mean, I just look at things that I don't understand. I know that if I get a parking ticket in this city, they will come into the can and find me. There's no stone left unturned to get that dough out of me, and if I don't pay it, it starts to double and triple. There is no stone left unturned. And yet I know this state is broke, and I know that we've put perfectly good businesses out of business because we got a bunch of bleeps walking in the day, looking at a TV, getting on their funky little cell phone, and ordering it from someplace else and not paying taxes. Yet we absolutely refuse to look at the list of the top 2,000 people that have been cheating on their sales taxes going through Amazon or someplace for the last 5 years and send them a bill. Yet if it's some poor bastard in a bad neighborhood that parks in front of a fire hydrant, that guy better come up with that $75 if he ever wants to drive again. I don't understand, Kevin, how we selectively get there to these places. I honestly don't. That it's okay to front run if you're a congressman, if you're the Fed, or if you're a big firm, but God help you if you're a little guy. I mean, as a country, how did we get there? I don't get it. Kevin, we're gonna cut in a little bit. I know you're gonna hang around when Luzon, but why don't you listen in? There's a big conference going on. I'll let him talk about it at the Palmer House this week. It's all the people that are now in the cannabis business. And the things, well, I'll let him give the details.
Interesting. Yeah, and I can stick around for a little while. I can't stay very long, so I'll just tell you when I got to go.
Okay, anyway, the gentleman's name is Elliot Lane. Elliot, how are you?
I am well this morning. How are you all?
I'm doing all right. There's a lot of people speaking at that conference. I mean, how long do you get up on a dais? Like 5 minutes or what?
You know, it tends to be a conversation we have to have a lot, but we've tried to mimic what we do on Benzinga.com and kind of a streamlined panel, fireside chat keynote where people get up for 15, 20, 30 minutes, chat about the topics, and then the next day we focus more specifically on the companies.
Why don't you give us the specifics before I get lost in other questions and we never get there. What days and all that stuff, because I'm good at that.
Yeah, absolutely. So next Tuesday and Wednesday, October 22nd, 23rd at the Palmer House, like you said, we're going to see probably, you know, close to 1,000 people there, really focusing on the two sides of being the investors that are interested in the cannabis space. You're going to see a lot of hedge funds, a lot of high net worths, family offices. And then on the other side of that, you're going to see really, really well-vetted cannabis companies and brands internationally and domestically.
So I mean, if you're looking to invest, I guess there's people there that'll be looking for money. There's always people looking for money. I guess is that just a human condition or what?
Industry. So the capital search is ongoing for a lot of these guys.
Are there going to be, what's the range of people? Are there? I mean, I know some people in the industry here in Illinois, and there's been a lot of consolidation. So are there going to be startups there, or people that own one place or two places, or the big place? I mean, just a whole mix of everybody?
Yeah, absolutely. So in terms of, you're going to see a lot of public companies there. So you're going to see your Cresco Labs, Trulieves, Acreages, Auroras, you know, probably one of the more popular companies in the world right now. But we also, you know, we want to bring in new opportunities for these investors to see as well, maybe something more like Grassroots or Revolution Enterprises, more Illinois-based, for these investors to take a peek at.
Are there, he's trying to use some correct English once in a while, are there people there if you just want to learn some of the talks about these are the five states that are in this phase, these are the five states in that phase, so at least you can get a lay of the land, or should you try and do that before you go?
You know, I would say because of the structure of this content, coming in with a regulation, just general knowledge is always helpful, but we obviously touch on it. You know, we're going to touch on the Illinois market, the Colorado market, the U.S. market, and then we're going to have a couple LPs discussing, how they position themselves in the U.S. market and so on and so forth. So, obviously, always helpful to have a little bit of background knowledge, but we will be going in depth into these separate markets.
How many states would you say are live right now?
I believe Illinois is going to be the 11th, coming online January 1st. With the adult rec market, we're very excited about it. It's going to be, ending up going to be one of the largest ones out there, in my personal opinion.
How many states are medical?
Oh, mid-30s, I believe.
Okay,
I
so it's up that high. But they're all, but even then, even then, they're all different, right? In how many, quote, diseases you're allowed to. Because Illinois' medical was actually very restrictive, wasn't it, when Rauner was governor?
I honestly, I'm not an expert on Illinois market. I will say, you know, I think Illinois's got some cool policies that they're doing, the programs that they're putting in place with the social equity, you know, related to drug-related crimes and things like that. But coming out on January 1st, obviously, with this bill. In regards to the past medical, I probably wouldn't want to, you know, give your listeners any any lies or false.
Well, I mean, some states, I mean, we I don't think Illinois ever went to, like, general pain or anything like that. It was always, you know, specific, you know, epilepsy. There were very restricted lists.
Right.
Where some states, you know, basically you got a hangnail and you feel bad, that's medical type of thing. Well, I mean, you know, just whoever.
Absolutely. I would believe that. Absolutely.
So, yeah, it's a, what is, are there going to be people talking about the regulatory issues with Washington and still people still running around with wheelbarrows of cash because you can't get the money into the bank? I mean, are there going to be people talking about that or no?
Yeah, you're going to see us touch on the Safe Banking Act for sure. You know, we'll also, you know, we're going to follow that over our next few conferences, you know, as it progresses more through the Senate and so on. You know, but we'll definitely be touching on regulation. You know, past that, you're going to see some really cool people there discussing, you know, their own personal plays in the market. You're going to see Bruce Linton, you know, and his experiences with Canopy and Gage. You're going to see Kevin Murphy from Acreage, Tim Seymour, and believe it or not, Jim Belushi is going to be joining us.
I was
going to
say,
well,
I saw Jim Belushi's name in there. I bet he's going to be a riot.
He's going to be. I'm so excited. I've been working on chatting with him for a few months now, and we're incredibly excited to have him there.
All right, so let's say, for instance, before we let you go, if somebody wants to sign up, what do they do? Who do they call?
Yeah, so easy thing here. Just head to bzcannabis.com. With that, you know, you'll see the Chicago tab. Just click in there. It'll take you right to the ticket page and use SJ30. That'll get you 30% off on the ticket. So
is it
cannabis.com.
If somebody forgets that and just goes to the benzinga.com, can they get there from there?
Yeah, you should be able to link from there to the cannabis page.
All right, but it was funny. It was interesting. I'm tempted to stop by, actually. I might.
Please do, man.
Is Joel coming in?
He better be.
Oh, all right.
Yeah, come to the cannabis events.
Well, if Joel's here, yeah, I'd love to see him.
You know, for all intents and purposes, so he should be.
Well, if he's here, maybe we get together for breakfast or coffee or something. Be cool.
Yeah, I'll pass that along to him. I'll make sure he gets in town then.
All right, take care of yourself, buddy. It was fun.
Yeah, nice talking to you. Yep. Appreciate the time, man.
S&P futures up 150, NASDAQ futures down 75 cents. Come back, we should have Mr. Lou Michaels. Kevin's going to hang in for a little while because he loves bantering with Lou, and they gang up on me. AV, you better be on my side. We'll be right back, Stocks and Jacks.
Hello, I'm David Andelman, founder and president of DAX Research, a registered commodity trading advisor. I'm also a wealth manager with PTI and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio show. For more than 30 years, professional traders at the CME, including four past CME presidents, have chosen DAX Research to help guide their trading. That same research is available to you. We are offering three research newsletters: the Daily News, our Daily Stock and Futures Trading Recommendations, and our twice weekly top three tiers of recommended stocks. Each of these reports are available via email. To benefit from the same research professionals have used for more than three decades, call me and get 2 weeks free with a 1 month subscription, or you may also call me for a free portfolio analysis to see how we can work together to build your future. I'm David Andelman, president of DAX Research. Call toll free 1-800-821-4968. Stock and futures have risk of loss and are not suitable for everyone.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI ProDirect can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI ProDirect. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. Markets close to all-time highs, interest rates close to all-time lows. Investors are nervous, no return on cash balances, may have some invested a little too much for comfort, some not invested at all, earning very little. The market itself seems nervous. Experts say you should protect yourself. Experts say you should never sell. Experts say to get out right now, yet they are all experts. Then again, they do not know you or your situation. There are also some strange things going on at brokerage and investment advisor firms. Some solid clients and even some diligent brokers and investment advisors are being tossed out. Not big enough, don't charge enough, whatever the reason. This may leave you in a place where there literally is no one knowledgeable left to talk to if needed. PTI Securities and Futures is still here. Either here at our Chicago home office or in Arizona with Jan Neal, we still believe in servicing clients and providing a home for the right brokers or investment advisors the old-fashioned way. We are competitive, but we're also available to help. The last few years have seen a straight-up market without the need of a lot of investment help. What about this year or next year? If things change in the markets, do you really think you are ready? We also have a long history of designing and managing portfolios for people just like you. Might be good for you to check us out at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here, right now.
Something happening here.
Hello, everybody. Stocks and Jocks. Tom Howe, she's AB on the board. Exactly, I think we have Mr. Kevin O'Neill still, and I think we have Lou, but I'm not positive, do we? Everybody here? Yes, we do. Okay. S&P Futures up $2. NASDAQ Futures flat. We have a couple of earnings. American Express up 217 now, and Coca-Cola up $1.20. So both of those were halfway decent, shall we say. IBM is, well, it's up 9 cents. It's making back 9 cents out of 7-something I lost yesterday. So not so good there. Lou, how are you?
Very good, sir. How are you this morning?
Fair to partly cloudy. I was sent that Vanity Fair article yesterday regarding individual trades that have taken place before some of these moves between Trump and the Chinese. And as I've been suspecting all along, Lou, I did not suspect enough. I'm appalled. Some of them were like, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars.
Do we? I saw the article, although I didn't read it in depth. Are there any particular trends other than these trades that were preceding the moves?
No, they just were stuff like the biggest one was before Trump essentially diverted the plane out of Japan to go see Z for an hour. Evidently, that was not well. Well, another one was I'm going to say out of the three that are in there, three or four, it sounds like two or three of them came from the Chinese side, not our side. And,
I sort of wonder about this, and is Kevin on, by the way? Hello, Kevin.
I believe so.
I am on. Good morning, Lou.
Good morning, sir. It's good to hear your voice. The question I would have is, you know, the president is so mercurial and so unpredictable in this area that I wonder what was or who was getting advance notice on this stuff and how they were doing it. And, you know, I'm not sure maybe I'm wrong, but you know, so much of these actions are just seem to be, you know, whatever I thought of in the last 15 minutes, I'm going to do. And I just wonder how much, you know, how much advance notice goes out on this.
Well,
stuff.
One of them, Lou, had nothing to do. I'm going to say, I think he had nothing to do with the Oval Office. It was a runoff, or it was a pre-run on the lady who runs Hong Kong with the new law on a Sunday night.
Sure.
So that I don't think I can possibly pin that one on Trump. I mean, I don't think so. But I'm saying, but what do you?
You could pin it on LeBron James.
Yeah, but I mean, how do you? I mean, I'm going to start with the top.
You might be able to, as a matter of fact.
Yeah.
That's who's out there front running. It is NBA players.
I was only half joking, Kevin.
Well, you know, your buddy, Milton Friedman, in the era of open outcry, when
he's dead.
I know. He's been dead for a long time. That's what I'm saying. You got to be careful when you quote people that are dead, because a lot of things have changed since they croak sometimes. In the era of open outcry trading, Milton Friedman's feeling was, don't even try and deal with the front running, because people will police it themselves. If you can see basically the whites of somebody's eyes who runs in there, they may get away with it once, but nobody will trade with them the next time. And so the industry will tend to police themselves. But now all that's gone by the way, the dodo bird, with this economic trading. What I was explaining to Kevin earlier, Lou, is I'm outraged, one, about the stealing. I want to ask you, what if you know it and you're Trump and you sit there and go, and I'm trying to get a deal with these guys, how much do I have to let them do illegally before I call them out on it and blow the other deal? Because they all seem to be tied together. But the other thing is, we probably have, you know, 500 people in this country who demand that if I do a trade, you know, more than 500 contracts, even if it's by 2 cents, and I'm spending $1,000, that RBC, our clearing firm, you know, deliver this exception report, how this is a huge trade and who I am and where I live. And the selective enforcement to me, Lou, is got me mind-boggling. I mean, if I was of the type, it would make me go postal. I mean, the idea that they can't wait to screw the little guy. They see something like this, and they all either look the other way or they look at their boss and he says no or whatever. I just don't get it. I mean, I'm never going to get it.
Well, I mean,
it's one of the fallacies that we get in government. We always have to pass a law to make sure that whatever just happened never ever
exactly.
ever happens again. But
yep.
We never enforce it. And, you know, we don't enforce a lot of stuff. And so, you know, why bother? We keep making laws, we don't enforce them, and then we wonder why we need to make even more laws.
But
and it's kind of this really nonsensical.
Well, go ahead, Lou.
More importantly, Kevin, this opens the door, when you pass these multiple laws, this opens the door to literally a police state, because what you end up with is a highly discretionary decision-making model on the part of your prosecutors who say, yeah, we're going to chase this, but we're not going to chase that.
Well, right.
It opens the door to a prosecutorial discretion that gets exercised all in one direction based on whoever the prosecutor is. And that's the essence of unfairness, and it's the essence of, unfortunately, the regulatory state, because, you know, as these positions get more and more politicized within the government, and I hesitate to use the word deep state, but that's what this comes out of. As these positions become more and more politicized, you see the discretion being exercised only in the direction that whatever that prosecutor's political beliefs or ideology happen to be. And because there are so many regulations and they reach so deeply into the lives of individuals and into the functions of companies, this discretion literally becomes an unaccountable branch of government that is played out every day in terms of how prosecutors decide they're gonna make their cases.
Well, Lou, I know people will take sides. And you know, because I get the stuff every day, and but I will say, from my perspective, now that I'm certainly nowhere near the fringe of either one of these parties. Okay, so I'm somewhere lost in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean on this mess. But I'm going to say the last 12 attorney generals, what they all have in common is they were all amazingly selective. Every one of them, I think, didn't do the job properly. And it doesn't matter whether they're Republican or Democrat. It just means that they were selective in a different direction. I can't name one that I thought was above the fray. Can you?
I don't know exactly what, you know, criteria you're looking at. I mean, the Attorney General is always somebody who is, you know, operating on the behalf of the executive branch for the president. So when you have an AG in place, he or she is going to be working, you know, for whomever the president is and whatever their agenda, whatever that person's agenda is. And I would expect that. What I don't expect is when you have clear violations of the law, I don't expect the AG to ignore them. And I don't expect the AG to participate in clear violations of the law. And that's what I find troubling. And I mean, that's what I found troubling about Holder with the Fast and Furious stuff. It's what I found troubling about Ashcroft. It's what, you know, I found troubling about a number of people.
Well, it goes all the way back to Reagan and the Iran-Contra. Position.
So I don't know if Barr falls into that category.
What I mean, I don't know. It goes back to Reagan's guy in the Iran-Contra. He didn't prosecute it. Didn't it have to come from Congress? I mean it's
going sure. Congress or Janet. No, I think he did. Yeah, somebody got people got prosecuted for Iran-Contra.
I know, but I thought it came from. I thought it came from the Senate investigation where Dan Inouye said we damn near went under. It was so bad that everybody in the middle of government wasn't after it, and somebody caught it. But I don't think it wasn't like Reagan's guy rattling the saber. But
I remember Oliver North getting sentenced. He ultimately got pardoned, or maybe it got overturned. I'm trying to remember the ultimate outcome, but I do remember him getting sentenced in a court of law.
But both of you guys, I honestly don't have a problem if we made if you went back to open outcry, which you're never going to do, and you actually could see the guy coming. I don't really have a problem laying off that stuff. But right now, if I read this Vanity Fair article, if I'm one of the three of us, and we don't usually agree on much, I don't think any one of us can read this article and be the head of the SEC and go, you know, all this stuff we're doing to these little people, let's at least lay off. I mean, what are we doing chasing these people down, spending all this money when we obviously can't do the job here? I mean, I
go the other way on it, Tom. I'm not a big government guy, but I am all in favor of the government enforcing the laws that are on the books. Period. Everybody. If I were to say where do we spend our money, instead of spending it on all the stupid stuff that we do, spend the money on enforcement, and the other area is spend the money on educating people. And that would be effective, you know, how we could effectively do things. So, you know, so for instance, in the healthcare arena, you know, we do healthcare legislation under the assumption that people are, just won't be able to figure it out themselves. Well, you know, have we ever tried to teach people about healthcare and health insurance and how it works? I took an insurance course in college as part of being a finance major that got into it a lot, but that was, you know, that I wasn't typical. Maybe we need to do that for, you know, maybe that's the role. So, you know, enforce the laws you have. Teach people and stop spending money on ridiculous
stuff.
Well,
we did this. One of you guys was on. Somebody sent it to me. Was it you, Lou, or was it Carl? Somebody sent me. This is when Obama first got in office. And he was railing about the Medicare and the medical stuff. And there's a study that comes out every year by somebody, whoever the hell the somebody is, and they estimate how much was wasted in the Medicare, Medicaid, insurance, mess that is medical care in this country. And it's somewhere in the 800 or 900 million. And no matter who's president, it never goes down. The jaw flapping they do, it like never goes down. I mean, I think you're right, Kevin. I'd like to see some enforcement, but I'm going to say we could probably take half the laws and bleep can them. Because they were.
I'd be fine with that too.
I mean, they were brought there because, you know, their response to something that government has. It's just like, I must hear the term, should the industry be regulated? Should this be regulated? Regulated is a term that has 100 different definitions. What do you mean by regulated? And who's going to watch these people? Every single time you put in a rivet and the Golden Gate Bridge, is there going to be somebody standing next there watching them and somebody else counting? I mean, at some point here, what are we talking about, regulation? Every time you do something, somebody's got to watch you. When you go to the can, there's got to be a guy checking out the procedures and what, you know. I mean, at some point here, I don't know. I mean,
well, no, and so this goes back to the discretion thing, Tom. The fact is we don't have that kind of an operation here. We just have the law in place. So when I become a prosecutor, if I've got a bee in my bonnet about almond growing and water use or conservation, I step in and I say, you know what? When was the last time somebody took a look at how much water use is going on in growing almonds in Southern California? Or when was the last time somebody took a look at the watershed implications of San Francisco not dealing with people pooping on the sidewalks out there? But by the way, this is actually happening. EPA is coming down on San Francisco because of their failure to deal with human waste in their water system. And if I don't care about that, that stuff doesn't get enforced. If we stepped in with a monster enforcement effort, if we had the manpower or the artificial intelligence capability to do that, we would find ourselves living in a police state. I mean, every time you throw a battery away, you throw a lithium battery away in your computer, you throw the computer away rather than taking it to be disposed somewhere. That's like a federal offense.
All right, Lou, you walk down a road here. Okay, now you got it. There's two directions to go here. I'm from the... I'm never going to get rid of the fact that I'm a son of a Southside cop, so it's in the blood. I don't see how the hell you let people blow through stoplights and red lights every single day, all day, do nothing about it, and then expect people to respect other laws.
Well, that's the broken window, and Kevin knows this one. That's the broken window school of policing, and it's been proven to be effective, which is you step in, identify them, you start with the minor stuff, and you enforce minor rules and regulations to get people to start thinking, listen, you got to follow the law. And it has a salutary effect through the chain of conduct that we expect people to follow, or we need people to follow with respect to law breaking.
But it starts...
So the idea is, if you want to clean up...
And gentlemen, I'm sorry, I need to cut out here.
Kevin,
a couple of conservatives ganging up on Tom. We've done our job today.
Kevin, as usual, terrific, bud. Good stuff.
Kevin. Yeah, you guys.
But I guess where I'm coming from, Lou, as much as I rail against things that I think are wrong with our system, I honestly believe that my core of course, which I really don't think that a lot of people in office now believe, is a lot of people died for this system, okay? And to me, your speed limits, okay? We elect people. We try and do a good job. We elect people. People sit down and they say, on this roadway, it looks to us, hopefully with a traffic engineer, that the speed limit should be 65. Now, if you and I decide this is like really wrong, it should be 75, then we have the right to go to the next meeting to petition to say, hey, look, I got a traffic guy. He says it should be 75. I take that road home. I want to be 5 more minutes on the couch. We don't get to just say, my car goes 95 that I just bought, or 135 that I just bought. I'm going 90. Screw you guys. It's not just the law. It's a respect for people getting together and saying the height of a house should be 4 stories. Lou, I don't care if it's 5, 3, 12, 2. To me, I think there's the system. There should be a respect for collectively we get together. It's going to have some warts, and we agree that this is the rule. If the rule sucks,
and I think you're right, and I think that's the way it used to be. But I think a lot of people now look at these rules as the way they look at the law in Russia, okay? Yeah. Which is the law is whatever you can enforce, and I get to get away with whatever you can't enforce.
Right, right.
And so everything, you know, you basically ignore standards until there's a cop sitting on the street corner. We have something similar like that. It's funny that you had mentioned speed limit, because I can't really think of a law that gets broken more than, you know, a minor law that gets broken more than speed limits. you know, there's a reason we don't have 55 mile an hour speed limits on most of our highways anymore, because people never obeyed them. We could make it so that 55 was the speed limit, and we could enforce it. And you know how we could do it. We could put cameras up that just like they do in certain places in Europe. You're going faster than a certain speed, there's a picture taken in your license plate, the ticket arrives in the mail.
Well,
and if you don't pay it, you're stuck.
Well, the reason for the 55, though, I mean, the reason why that had nothing to do with the process I described. Citizens get together.
No, it's not the will of the people.
Well, but
it's
also not the will of a traffic engineer.
I agree.
You're not the will of a traffic engineer. There's no way that had to do with gas mileage. But there's no way you're going to get a traffic engineer and say, I-80 in Nebraska, it's not safe to go 65. I mean, come on, right? So it kind of got absurd, because clearly if we all went 35, we get even better gas mileage, right?
But one public policy justification is just as good as another, isn't it? If it gets made by your quote elected officials.
But there was a third wheel in there, and let's say the wheel went away, because now cars are.
I think the wheel went away because nobody was willing to drive 55 miles an hour and
right.
When the highway was open. And it didn't matter how much gas you were burning. People didn't care.
Oh, I get it.
We wouldn't, you know, the enforcement mechanism, trust me, the enforcement mechanism fell completely apart. Even when they were, quote, trying to apply the 55-mile-an-hour speed limit, there wasn't the enforcement to do so because nobody followed it unless there was a police car on the highway doing 55 and tracking.
But now in Canada, when I went, the last time I was in Toronto, I believe I went by a sign that said, I don't know, whatever the speed limit is, like, wasn't that high. It was like 60 because it was in Toronto. You know, over 70, you know, $100, over 80, you know, $300, over 90, lose your license. But it was right there. It basically said,
sure,
if you want to go a little bit faster and risk it, it'll cost you a hundo, you know, but if you want to make it to the point where you're endangering other people's lives, by the way, you're out of the driver's seat.
Yeah.
You know, which to me makes perfect sense, to be honest with you. But
I think going 100 miles an hour on a U.S. highway is presumptively reckless.
Yeah.
So that's reckless driving right there.
But how do we get? I guess I don't see how, Lou, people don't. But there are people who almost don't mind the big people cheating. I mean, it's not like, you know, it was the Obama administration where we said the congressman could front run essentially stuff, and we have staffers that are selling information in the Senate and House, from what I understand, to lobbyists and people that are trading stocks. Lou, we don't seem to have a problem with the big people cheating. Is it because everybody secretly wants to be a big person? I mean, there's a psychology thing here. I don't quite get it. I would have a real problem being my Southside policeman and stopping the guy with the old junker car where I know the ticket, and then letting the guy with the Porsche go by and say, well, he's a big shot. He's got a Porsche. He should get to go faster. I could never do that. And yet it appears everyone's comfortable with it.
I mean, I don't know if you say people don't have a problem with it. I have a problem with it. You see the reaction with Jesse Smollett. I mean, people had a problem with that. He was politically connected. That's why he was let go, or he wasn't charged. I think there's an understanding that this kind of stuff happens, but I don't. At some level, so many of these things are factors or are prosecuted based on factors other than simple concepts of justice and law breaking. They're based on factors of what's going to get me elected, what's going to get me, you know, get my party or advance my party's power base further. You know, the whole point of the Democrats under Obama basically ignoring the federal immigration statutes with respect to people who are already here is a classic example.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
yeah.
We're not going to enforce that law. Why not? Because our political power base, it will punish us if we do, and we can use that as a lever against the Republicans. And I mean, presumably there's some flip side with Republican administration not enforcing some law. I don't know what it is right off the top of my head, but I mean, that's, we look at that, and what I think you see is, as long as my ox isn't being gored, I'm willing to turn a blind eye to selective enforcement by politicians and attorneys general.
Well, Lou,
I hate to be too cynical, but I think that's exactly what you got.
I don't understand that. Let's put it this way: if Lou Michaels, if the speed limit's 55, and you sneak home at 75, and you pull in the driveway and you get 2 minutes more on the couch, to the extent that you didn't hit anybody, it's reasonably a victimless crime. Okay? I mean, if you whack into somebody, obviously it's not. But when I was...
Well, in the sense that I did not cause any damage that day, yes.
Well, the reason why this got me... talk about, you know, whatever, a burr under my saddle is this. I did this thing with Joan Esposito the other day, and she talked about, she wanted me to do a report on her show regarding impeachment and the markets. So I dug into the Nixon and the Clinton thing. What it did is whenever I do any research, it digs up hopefully something I put in my mind in a file cabinet that says don't go near because you get too pissed off. It reminded me of the long-term capital fiasco. And to bail those guys out, the Fed made a move on an expiration Friday morning. And evidently, from what I heard afterward, because they asked me in New York, some of the people that had gotten a call from the Fed, how bad did people in the OEX pit on the trading floors get clobbered? And I had two or three of my best friends were carried out and never traded again because the move in the market was so dramatic on an expiration day. They essentially gave somebody the heads up beforehand with the idea, go get your money back. It was exactly like the scene in Casablanca where Rick gave the good-looking young lady and her husband placed it on 24 black twice, now get out of here, go get your ticket type of thing. It was exactly,
yeah.
It was exactly like that. And now I see this going on with this other stuff here. The difference is we could make the case somewhat, you sneaking on the speed limit is a victimless crime. This $180 million these people made, they made it from somebody else. I mean, in this, I think that a lot of, not our listeners, but if you go on other shows, like I go on once in a while, they think that somehow, and I'm not accusing people of being dumb, but in areas that you're not privy to, I think people somewhat think that you trade, quote, with the market. And you'll hear people on CNBC and Fox Business will say, money's moving into the market. Lou, money can't move into the market because you can move money into the market. I can, or pull it out. But the fact is, you trade with another person. If you buy 1,000 shares of IBM, you're paying him. Your money's going in, his money's coming out.
Oh, sure.
But I mean,
somebody. But again, the impact. I mean, this is not what's his face running his Ponzi scheme out of New York.
Right.
The Jewish guy Madoff.
Yeah.
This isn't Madoff running his Ponzi scheme among the Jewish community in New York and Chicago. And ripping people off so that they're destitute later on. This impact, as far as we can tell, gets spread over hundreds of thousands of investors, or maybe 100 accounts with hundreds of thousands of investors. And so the actual personal impact that affects people is somewhat negligible.
Unless you're in the OEX pit, long-term capital, and somebody just bought 100 calls from you at 3/16, and 20 minutes later, there's $6. That's 120.
That's 120 grand. That's a small class of people, Chief.
Well, okay.
So I think that's why you see people sort of minimizing these damages or the impact of the stuff in their minds.
Right, this guy, at one morning, made $180 million profit. Why are we to assume that the people on the other side of the 180, all A, could afford it, B didn't care?
Oh, I agree.
I mean, that's a lot of dough.
I agree. You're not getting any argument from me. I don't believe those crimes are victimless. I'm just trying to explain why I think it's hard for people to get to generate the level of moral outrage that you get when you have some other more personal, identifiable crime.
Well, if you stole $50 from an old lady's purse, they'll hang you. Something like this. What do you mean?
That's
there's
right.
A bunch of traitors. I mean,
yeah.
Well, and that's why I think the S&P futures up 150, NASDAQ futures unchanged. We got nothing going on here this morning, although we have Coca-Cola up, we have American Express up. Be right back, Stocks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox. The Control Freak's Guide to Life, Money, and Probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you are aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed-income securities, and are now unhappy with their choice. PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and try to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello, everybody. Stocks and jocks. I'm Tom Allen. She's AV on the board. We have Mr. Lou Michaels and a rare and welcome Friday appearance. S&P futures up 2.25. NASDAQ futures up 150. Dow's up 21. Virtually all because Coca-Cola is up $1.30 and American Express is up $2. Around the rest of the world, slow day. In Europe, DAX is up 3, call that flat. FTSE down 4, call that flat. CAC around down 22, we'll give that a 0.4 mention. Over in Asia, Nikkei up 40.1%, not much there. Shanghai, however, to move, down 39.1%. Hang Seng down 128.5%. Hey, V, our guys downstairs are heading out to an expressway thing. There must be an accident somewhere. Engine company number one here, the guys right below us. A 10-year, 1.75. Again, up in the 1.48 bottom there. At least the bottom, we hope it's the bottom. A Bund, 30.37 negative. up from 0.78 negative. I still can't have trouble doing these negatives being higher than before. Japan, minus 0.16. They bottomed out, I believe, at minus 0.29. Oil, little rally in oil today, 49 cents. 54.42 Brent up 23 cents. 60.14 RBOB gas, 163, so up a couple of cents. Gold is down, but not as much as earlier. It was down 9, now it's only down 5. Silver down 8 cents. AV, what do you guys, traffic, weather, and sports? And we'll ask Lou about, should we never have a guy do a quarterback sneak again? Because the tweets are all over Andy Reid about the Mahomes quarterback sneak. But go ahead, give us the other stuff first.
Good morning again. It is 7:35 in Chicago. Currently 43 degrees. We're expecting to have a nice day with some sunshine and clouds. The highest of the day will be 60 and the lowest 47. So I think we're going to have a very beautiful day for October in Chicago. And as usual, sunny and hot day in Phoenix with the highest 85 and the lowest 59 of the day. In traffic, we only have one accident, new accident reported on Dan Ryan Express going north before 35th Street. Two left lanes are blocked, so expect delays up to 10 minutes. And of course, the traffic volume got heavier at this time of the morning. Also, we have a lot of road constructions, which is causing some delays, especially on 290 Eisenhower, 90 West, downtown area. So that's what I got.
Sports, we got the Astros 3-1 over the Yankees, going back to Houston. And we have Kansas City winning, but losing their quarterback, we don't know how long, with a dislocated kneecap, which obviously has to have some ligament issue with it, or else it wouldn't have dislocated, right, Lou?
Well, I mean, I've actually had a dislocated kneecap. It hurts like hell, and it seemed to take forever to heal. I suppose they could give him shots to kill the pain once they get it reseated. Typically, it doesn't involve ligament tear. It involves an unseating of the kneecap and stretching, but it typically doesn't involve ligament tear. And no surgery is required to repair it. But I mean, it weakens my experience, and I assume you know that he's got better doctors working on it than I did. But my experience was it weakened the knee tremendously. And
for a while, or forever?
You know, for a guy, not necessarily forever, but for a guy who's, you know, already hobbled by an ankle injury that's affecting his ability to throw, you know, you put this in on top of it, and I just wonder how much more effective he's going to be, or how much less effective he's going to be with that. I don't fault the call. Of course, I saw it on replay because it was 8 hours, 8 hours behind me. But I don't fault the call. I mean, I'm sorry, quarterback sneak. You don't expect something like that to happen, and that's just one of those things. I mean, freak injuries happen all the time.
And, well, I remember,
and I don't think hindsight being, you know, hindsight really helps us with that. With that analysis, I would have made the same call, I think. I mean, let me put it this way. I didn't think it was an unreasonable call.
Twitter gives everybody an opinion, though, Lou. Everybody's opinion now is heard. Everybody's opinion is now heard. The armchair quarterbacks have got their voice, finally.
Well, true. But you know, again, the armchair quarterbacks only speak after the result's in. You sit there and go, okay, fine. Now I've seen it. I know. You know the result. In the heat of the moment, when you're looking at trends and you're looking at the analyses and you're looking at what your line's been able to do with regard to blocking and everything else, I don't think you say, yeah, this is a terrible call. I mean, are we getting to the point from a football perspective anyway? Are we getting to the point where we can't risk quarterbacks to do anything?
Pretty much.
And I mean, I don't think so. But I mean, of course, you know. Tom, think of the running quarterbacks that are out there. The nature of that position has changed a lot. It used to be you got to be a pocket passer if you were going to make things happen, but that's not the case anymore. You've got a lot of young, athletic running quarterbacks who are not afraid to pull it down and take off, and it adds a new dimension to the game. It's a much more exciting game. People get to demonstrate their athleticism a little bit more, and so that I think is changing the nature of the position back again to a more kind of a running back athlete centric position. And if that's the case, then you can't say that letting your big strong quarterback do a push into like something like this is a problem. I mean, it's not like he's running an option.
Right. Well, I agree. I just, but I'll kind of push, having played 16-inch softball my whole life, and I was in somebody dislocated a finger and they put it back in when the guy continued. But, so one doctor told me once, he goes, your fingers are held in place by ligaments. When they go to a direction they're not supposed to be in, it's because one of the ligaments either tore a little bit or stretched like hell. And if you put it back,
yeah,
he said if you put it back in, either one of those is going to take 4 to 6 weeks to really sort of heal, because it wouldn't have got out of where it was supposed to be if there wasn't any damage, right?
Correct. He's going to have it. 15, 20 years from now, he's probably going to have some knee trouble, I would think. And especially if he goes back in, they're gonna try to fix him up and get him to where he can play again, in 3 or 4 weeks. And that's how that stuff lingers. You may not feel it for a while, for a couple of years, but I think eventually it's gonna start hurting when they rush him back like that.
I got a question.
But welcome to the NFL.
I got a question regarding the selection of the Doral, and we can fight all we wanted about whether or not it's not something I would do if I owned the place. But my question to you, Lou, is I've been at the Doral once. First of all, I thought the place was incredibly old, and that was in 1998. Matter of fact, the fire alarm went off in our building, so I didn't even sleep the night I was there, so maybe that gives me a bad feeling. And when I played golf, it was 98 and humid, so I didn't like that so much either. But anyway,
did Trump own it then?
No. This was, I don't know who owned it then, but I think he's owned it fairly recently. It's 10 years maybe? I don't know. I shouldn't say that. I don't know. Maybe somebody will tweet that in. But my question is, what I do remember about the place, because I was fascinated by the array of aircraft coming in, it's right on the landing pattern of the international airport. Out of all the places you would pick, what are they going to do, maneuver all those planes where they can't come in that way or what?
I don't know. I agree with you. I think it's a mistake. I think it's inappropriate. I won't say it's a violation of the Emoluments Clause, because I don't think anybody really understands what that means right now, but I just think it's inappropriate for the president to steer work or steer business to one of his businesses. I don't like it. And But again, this guy, as I said, this guy pushes the button to blow things up as easily as anybody. I did want to make a couple of comments, and I just briefly, I've only looked at the letter, and I'm still digesting it, the op-ed, but I thought Admiral McRaven's comments were just completely wrong.
Fill us in on this. Which one are you talking about?
I'm sorry?
Which one are you talking about?
Oh, the McRaven op-ed that was in the Times yesterday, where he attacks the president and says he needs to be removed, and I'm sorry. When you're a retired flag officer, you don't get to say stuff like that.
I don't really. The whole idea of who gets to have an opinion and who doesn't. I mean that's going down the pipe here, because if I say, I think there ought to be motherhood. Within 40 seconds, there's people digging into my background. Why does he say that? What's his angle? I mean, at some point, Luke, people do get to talk. I mean, without the other side vilifying their background. I don't have a problem. Why don't we just let Why don't we just let the process play out? You know where I'm at on this. I think you do. You were on last week. I don't necessarily think this close to an election, unless there is stuff in there that we don't know yet, that is really inappropriate, and is something that's dangerous going forward. I don't see why we just don't. I mean, if you're on the other side, put up a good candidate and let the guy dig his own hole. He's doing the best he can.
They can't do that. And I just want to go back real quickly on McQuaid.
What did he say? I didn't see it.
He's a four-star flag guy. He can't say what he said.
What did he say?
It invites all kinds of problems that we don't even want to approach in this country. And he's dead. I think he's dead wrong for saying it. And he just, that's one of those opinions you keep to yourself. And you understand.
Wait a minute. Tell us what he said, will you?
This is driven by what happened in Kurdistan, and I understand that. But he still is wrong to say it.
All right. Well, tell me what he said.
He said that Trump needed to be gone. He couldn't be gone soon enough. Something to that effect.
Well, at some point, Lou, it's not a high crime and misdemeanor. I mean, again, I have no idea what that even means. I'm not a legal dude, but I'm starting to get a sense here that the guy is on the phone with this Erdogan, and this is coming through various and sundry reports. I'm just getting a sense, just like I was about these trades, that something isn't right here. You can't have a dude. I mean, when I was reading the stuff about the phone call and in a transcript, and I don't know if you were listening to that earlier in the week, I got some article that I was reading about the transcript with the call to the Ukraine.
And this is Ukraine, yeah.
Yeah, but I'm saying, but you know, my mind works different, unfortunately, probably than most, but as I went through the process, Lou, the man refuses to have the in-person, they said normally, if you go back five presidents, every time a call like that, there's an in-person meeting with like three or four people in the Oval Office.
Is a way. That's not Trump style.
He doesn't want to do that. So if you don't do that, there's like a six-page report that they give you. He doesn't want that. So they started giving him a one-page report. He doesn't want that. Now they're giving him four index cards with points on them. And evidently, he doesn't even realize that you can't tear those up and throw them in the trash. The people go up unbeknownst to him and pull them out, tape them back together, and then put them back and put them in the record, because that stuff is supposed. This is an official call. This isn't Erdogan's at the White House. Let's go take a walk in the Rose Garden, which I understand you need to be able to talk to people off the record. But this is an official call. He doesn't seem to get the difference, I don't think, Lou. And that's a problem for me. But also, somewhere in his Erdogan conversation, he somehow felt that he was going to get assurances by this guy on his own, that he was going to, the guy was either not going to attack or he was going to let our people get a chance to get out or whatever. And somehow the guy goes right back on him and does whatever he damn well pleases. And now Trump's outraged. But he was the one on the call. He probably didn't listen to his people and say, this guy, you can't trust him. Oh, no, my gut feel says I can trust. God, I don't want to be, I'm not a four-star general. I don't want to call for anybody's removal. But, Lou, we can't have people, if that's what's happening, we can't have people shooting from the hip without even on phone calls with people that they don't want to prepare for. I mean, I don't. It's not a high crime. I don't think it's an impeachment. But Jesus, it's a little too much for me. If that's what's going on,
I think his shoot from the hip style is exactly what you described. And I mean, if you want any further evidence of it, look at that look at that letter that he sent to Erdogan after the phone call. You know, that two-paragraph letter that he signed and sent to Erdogan right away. I mean, it's not diplomatic. Let me put it that way. It's a businessman talking to another businessman, except Erdogan's not a businessman. And I guess my response for the president is, fine, if you don't, if you're going to make a statement like, don't be a tough guy, don't do something stupid or we'll punish you, you better be prepared to drop the hammer. And I'm not sure the president was. I thought the decision on the Kurds was reckless and badly thought out. But the thing I really objected to was the way it was executed, with no notice to anybody, just, you know, an announcement out of the blue. We get nothing for it except further destabilization there, which maybe is something, you know, the president wants or the president's okay with. I agree with you. I don't want this kind of shoot from the hip person in there on these kinds of issues. And yet that's what we got. And quite frankly, that's what we're likely to get second time around, unless we see someone come out of the Democratic primary who is more moderate, more thoughtful. I don't know than the front runners we're seeing right now.
Well, what do you get in the? In the
I mean, that's going to happen.
I've been doing some reading about the evidently, you know more about this than me, that there are copious notes. How's that? That's what my high school teacher just would say. I encourage you to take copious notes. The brother from
right.
remember your guys telling you that? Anyway, evidently there were copious notes from the Constitutional Convention. And I don't know if you ever did any of that in law school or people read through them, but evidently they spent all kinds of time on this impeachment clause. And there's boatloads of notes from Benjamin Franklin, who was a major man involved in that, and then John Adams and people. And they, you know, we're talking about no, you have to have a certain amount of power. They can't throw you out. You just got elected. But oh, by the way, you got to do your job because nobody's above the law, and we got to have a mechanism to get the guy the hell out of here if he isn't. But what do you do with a guy that maybe, now that we're almost getting into a wartime president, that is just not up for it? Or I'll give another example. There was a guy who ran, and maybe your knowledge of history is better than mine, somewhere before Woodrow Wilson, back in that era. The guy ran, and his point was that the president's job didn't even really matter, and the less he did, the better, because everything they do seemed to screw stuff up. So the guy wins, and for 4 years, I don't even know if he even showed up, Lou. I mean, I forgot the guy's, but his whole idea of running was that the president, whenever he did something, inevitably did stuff wrong, so the whole purpose was to get in office and stop that and not doing it. Well, how do you?
Sounds like Coolidge.
I think it might have been Coolidge. And his whole point was, how do you throw that guy out? You're not doing your job.
Jonah Goldberg, who writes a column called The G-File, and maybe AJ could find it, but Goldberg writes that impeachable offenses are not necessarily criminal offenses, and you shouldn't look at impeachment as a legal or a justification for impeachment as a purely legal affair, and I tend to agree with him. It's a political thing, and if you have a president that nobody likes, that nobody can trust, that nobody can deal with, or a guy who just says, you know what, I'm going to let the executive sort of run itself, and I'm just going to sit back and not do very much. That government governs best, which governs least. I'm going to govern least. If you've got a guy like that in there, and nobody can deal with him, I mean, I think you can have an impeachment. I think impeachment's appropriate under those circumstances, even if you can't point to a specific, crime. I mean, a felony or whatever that the individual has committed. Rather, what you look for is whether, you know, he's worth or he's somebody that you can deal with and that we can trust in the office of the president. And maybe that's what the Democrats are trying to do here. One of the interesting things I heard from the Tony Kornheiser show of all places, Kornheiser is quite liberal, and the people around him are all raging liberals on his podcast. But he had a great quote. He said, look, when the House impeached Bill Clinton in 98 or whenever it was, I knew exactly what they were impeaching him for. They were impeaching him for perjury and the impact of his perjurious conduct on the White House. I got that. He said, I have no idea what they're impeaching. They want to impeach Trump for. I don't know, a phone call? But we know that the other side was engaging Ukraine for political purposes, years earlier. What are we impeaching him for? And I thought that was very telling that somebody like that, who's well read and you know, generally liberal, generally very much pro Democrat, somebody like that was asking, what are we going to do? What are we doing here?
Lou,
I thought that was very revealing.
By the way,
it reminded me of the war in Iraq decision in 2002 when we were going to go, and I'm going, why are we going? Give me a reason why we're going.
Right.
So anyway, go ahead.
Anyway, I'm very much with him on that. What I honestly would like to see, Lou, and this will never happen in this country, I would like to see the cesspool. And I started out with a friend of mine who got involved in one of these people on the trading floor way back in the day, one of these citizen of the of Monaco international tax / carpetbagger / sleazebag. And then I got involved with those, the people who were doing those bonds that never traded. I've told you this 100 times.
Yep.
And I must have talked on the phone to people around the world, 25 people, one of them sleazier than the next, Lou, all involved in this international, U.S. sends money here, the Gates Foundation sends, what I would like to see is somebody to stand up. Now the president should, but he won't. I should say, look it. It appears to me, with people going to jail and now Biden's kid being part of it, I want to take the Ukraine. I want to take two other places at random, maybe Guatemala, maybe some other damn place. I want you guys, the Republicans, you guys, the Democrats, pick me three people on either side of the aisle. I don't care if they're Democrats or senators or representatives that are adults, and we're going to get Roberts or somebody from the Supreme Court that everybody can agree on. They're going to get in a room. They're going to elect their chairman, and we're going to take an eight-year look at all of our aid that went to the Ukraine, where it went, who followed it, who made money on it, who the hell are all these people, and how many of them should be in jail? Should we? How much of our money actually got to where we thought it was going to go? I think it's time, Lou, and just let the skeletons fall where they may.
I agree with you. I mean, I'd love to know. I mean, the whole genesis of this. I got a big argument on Facebook on this. The whole genesis of this crazy, you know, this phone call issue was the 2016 use of Ukraine by the Democrats when they were trying to get bad information on Trump.
I'm going to ask you a very personal mental question, Lou, because you like to think you know everything, and I think you do. Did you have any idea that there has not been a tape of one of these conversations since the Nixon era?
I'm sorry, did I have any idea
that not one of these conversations has been taped since the Nixon era?
No.
I mean,
no.
I've had people tweet into the show, email me, Chief, you shouldn't be saying a word unless you have read the transcript word for word. Lou, it's a doctored document. It's not...
There is no transcript.
It's not a transcript. There is no tape. There is a transcript.
No. Well, but the transcript of that phone call is not verbatim.
Do you know exactly how it's done? I'll tell you.
In this case, it was somebody taking contemporaneous notes.
No. The style now, and it started under Obama or Clinton or somebody, somewhere after Nixon, there are two people there with headphones listening to the conversation, just like you and I are talking. One person repeats word for word everything I say. The other person repeats word for word everything you say. But they don't put it down like a court reporter does, court reporter. It goes into a machine that spits out a written copy of what I just said and what the other person just said. So I'm repeating Trump. This thing's picking me up like you're the thing in the bottom of the TV, you know. What do you call it? The closed caption. This thing pulls out a document. The person who did it gets to edit it first. Say, that's not what I said. That's not what I said. He edits it. Then it goes somewhere else. Then it becomes, quote, the transcript. But there's no tape. This whole mess with all the tweets and everything, I keep thinking, why doesn't somebody just listen to the tape? Lou, you could have knocked me over with a feather when I found out there has not been a tape since Nixon.
Right. No, I didn't know that. But my understanding was that this was not a transcript in the context that I know a transcript is an attorney, which is a word-for-word, verbatim recording of what was said, and transcripts in my world are recorded. There is a tape recording of what is, you know, what was said, and then the thing is reduced to writing, and then the person who's being deposed or who's being recorded typically has an opportunity to review it, to correct typos or name spellings or stuff like that. But then it goes down, and there's a tape backing it up. So this doesn't surprise
me. Lou, we got to go, bud.
But it creates all kinds of problems.
We got to go. You be good. Have a nice weekend. SP Futures now down 25 cents. NASDAQ Futures down 3. Thank you, AV. We'll be back on Monday. Stocks and Jacks.
What did we learn, Palmer?
I don't know, sir.
I don't know either. I guess we learned not to do it again.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to ptisecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at ptiprodirect.com. Nadex. offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit Nadex.com. HomeSource Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. Dax Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.